The World Tomorrow. Ambassador College presents Garner Ted Armstrong, bringing you the plain truth about today's world news and the prophecies of the world tomorrow.
And greetings, friends around the world. One of the questions most often asked a minister is, living in a world such as this is, how can I have faith in God? Now, you know, people just don't believe there is a God, and can you blame them when you look around the world and you think about all of the kind of teaching you've heard most of your life? You probably, with me, read the unusual cover of the magazine. It's been a couple of years or so now since the big furor over whether or not God exists came to light, and when people were saying, God is dead. And now some of the world's leading evangelists leapt into the fray and began to say, yes, he is. Then the evolutionists and some other religionists said, no, he isn't, and back and forth the idea raged. But the idea in millions of minds today seems to be, the more we learn along technical and scientific lines, the more knowledge we accumulate, the farther we advance toward a journey to the stars, the more things we invent, the more understanding we have in fields such as nuclear physics, microbiology, miniaturization, all the various scientific and technological advancements of this modern age, then the more we are free to discard old superstitions. And this is true, of course, if everything you've heard about it is a superstition. Now, the idea from a sort of a comparative religious standpoint is, a philosophical standpoint, the idea that man needed in the past. This is the way many people approach it. A God idea. Now, this would be like an outlet, like Peanuts, you know, with thumb sucking or his blanket to his ear, an outlet for his emotional difficulties and his needs. Like man needed a sort of a crutch to lean on. I've seen that type of copy in some of the booklets and the magazine articles on the subject, that man anciently needed a God. He needed some kind of an excuse, and he could tell his kids, look, I don't know where the moon came from, fella, as he said in the ancient Hebrew language, probably God made it. But today, man has matured, we think, and so man doesn't need the idea of a God anymore. Now, I suppose, to comparative religionists, this sounds like a pretty good basic philosophy. But, you know, it leaves something out. It leaves out the great, vast question, what if there is a real God? And instead of thinking, well, I know, but obviously there isn't any God, but it's just that man used to need the idea of a God, now we don't need it anymore, so we discard it, it was just one of these things we kidded ourselves about all the way along, this is the way a lot of people look at it. What if, all along, there has been a real God who really does exist? And what if it doesn't, after all, make any difference what man thinks about it one way or the other? What if it doesn't make a bit of difference about the history of man, or the needs of man, or what you think you need, or what science says one way or the other, but what if you can prove that there is a God who does exist, and what if there is no other answer? Now, what if? Well, surely people might answer evolution and modern science has done away with the idea of a God, hasn't it? Now, you must be kidding if you say something like that. Surely you're kidding. If you say evolution has done away with the idea of God, have you ever seen evolution proved? Have you ever studied it? Have you ever studied ecology? Have you ever studied adaptation and change? Have you ever studied microbiology? Have you ever studied physics, chemistry, biology, astronomy, some of the physical sciences, paleontology and the like? Have you ever really seen the disagreement, the indecision, the wide vagaries, the superstitions nearly, the guesswork, the hazy notions, the vague hypotheses, the sketchy, rickety, shaky, sort of a tumble-down shack of a framework that evolution really is? And it is. You talk about a shaky structure, that thing's worm-eaten all the way through to every last bit of the foundation, and it's about to come tumbling down in a great dusty cloud of a huge collapse. When you look into evolution and you ask yourselves, has evolution ever really been proved? You have to come up with a big resounding no, it has not. Now, people ask, how can I have faith in a God in a world such as this is? Well, what difference does it make your environmental conditions about what you've got faith in one way or the other? That's like some character saying, can I have courage when there's trouble? That's like somebody saying, The more I learn, the more I find out I don't know, and the more I'm surrounded by environmental change and circumstances, by evil deeds from other people, the more we advance in this mechanical age of ours, well, the more I get disgusted with fellow man, therefore there can't be a God because of all these exterior circumstances. People merely reason it well with so much crime, with so much suffering, so much sickness, with so much war in the world, and no way out of it, apparently, how can there be a God? Well, now look, has it ever occurred to you that maybe there is a God after all, and maybe he's got a purpose and a program, and maybe if you looked into his purpose and program, there is a great reason why that God has kept hands off this world, and why he has not been interfering in your life, and why he has not come down and thundered and roared and shouted at you and told you, get busy and do what I tell you or else? Now, you've got no complaint coming. Because you know as well as I do that no God has ever come and appeared before you and said, you do this or I'm going to break your knees. He's never said it. You haven't had any interference. Nobody has grabbed you by the ear and led you to some church or made you get on your knees or made you study the Bible. So admit that to yourself first of all. Then let's find out what a sort of a silly question it is when you hear people asking someone, now, living in a world such as this is, how can I have faith in God? It's an excuse. It's not a good question. It doesn't make any difference whether it's environmental conditions and circumstances are evil and bad as to whether or not you can have courage. So let's get at the root of the problem by asking, what do you mean, faith? What is faith? Does a teenager going to high school need faith? You can equate faith with courage, but faith is given a dictionary definition and a Bible definition. Now, the Bible definition of faith is found in the faith chapter of the Bible. Many of you may know where that is. Most do not, of course. It's found in Hebrews, the 11th chapter, where you find faith is described as the evidence of things, the very substance of things that are not seen. Now, do you believe in things you cannot see? Have you received positive assurance that something exists, that it's there, that you have it, you can utilize it, it's a force, it's a power, an energy, it may even be life-sustaining, and yet you don't see it? Oh, you bet you have, continually, every day. Now, you believe in atoms, but you can't see them. You believe in molecules, but you've probably never seen one, although scientists can see certain organisms and certain groupings of molecules and cells and the like. They can't see atoms, though. You've never seen air, but you believe in it. You've never seen electricity, you only see what it does, but you believe in it. You can't see gravity, but you believe in it. You cannot see space because it's endless, it's empty, it's nothingness, but it's there, and you believe in it. You can't see such things as human emotion. You can only see what they produce, but you believe in human emotions. You believe in love, you believe in hope, you believe in joy, you believe in hatred, certainly the world believes in that. These are intangibles, maybe, and yet they're quite real. An emotion is not seen, only the effect of it, but what creates and what causes this emotion. You believe in many things you do not see. But now there are plenty of material evidences in which you may have absolute trust and faith. You look at height and people get scared. You look at confinement and people get claustrophobia. They're afraid. They look at tangible, measurable, discernible, weighable, physical things, environmental conditions, and they believe in them. A man gets into his automobile, the family car, with his wife and his children, and he pulls out of the glove compartment a map, and he looks at it, and he decides to go somewhere, and he's got perfect confidence in cartographers, map makers, and the like, that he's going to go down route so-and-so, and he's going to get to his ultimate goal. He's going to arrive at this village, this hamlet, this town that he's never seen before, and he's got perfect faith in other human beings that he is going to duly arrive at his destination. Now look at all the people he has faith in. He's got faith in the gas companies that they've placed fuel stops along the way. He's got faith there will be plenty of restaurants open. He's got faith that people are going to accept the kind of a monetary symbol that he has in his pocket, whether crumpled paper or jingling change, or maybe just his signature on a piece of paper that somebody else honors. He's got faith in banks along the way. He's got faith in all kinds of people's integrity. He's got faith in the weather. He's got faith in the automobile manufacturer. He's got faith in his tires. But people say, well, I can't have any faith in God. They know all these other things exist, but they don't think God exists. Now, if faith is the evidence, is the proof of something which is not yet seen, something which you have not yet received, how can you have positive assurance in something that you have not yet received? Well, you do it every day. Sure you do. You do it every day. People receive a check from a large corporation, and it says, do not bend, spindle, and mutilate. As a matter of fact, these checks sort of drive us crazy. A lot of people begin to feel like they are an IBM card today. Like the kid who went to Berkeley said, I feel like the only time I'm noticed up here is when I bend or spindle my IBM card. But, you know, we receive a check from a large corporation. We go down to the bank. We deposit the check. We walk away whistling in perfect confidence in other human beings, in the corporation, in the promissory note that we've delivered. And we go down to the supermarket, and then we write out a piece of paper, all this paper shuffling back and forth, paper clips and staples and bank stamps and the like. And somehow you go home with tangible things, carrots, rutabagas, parsnips, meat, fruits, vegetables, canned goods, and so on. These are tangible. You can eat those. You can't eat money. And you can't eat that IBM card, but you can, or this check that you get from the government if you're a pensioner, as many people are. But you've got perfect faith, absolute positive faith, that you're going to receive it. People have absolute faith in the postal system. They've got faith. Many people have faith in reverse. They've got faith that everything's going to be bad. People can have all kinds of that kind of faith, it seems. They will say, well, there's no need to worry. Nothing is going to turn out all right. They say, I don't care what you tell me. It's going to be bad. I don't care what you say. There's no good news forthcoming. Where do people get off asking a question like that? And yet a leading Protestant minister had said that it's one of the most often asked questions. One that he listed in a magazine that has national circulation. He said, one of the questions that is most often asked today is, how can I, living in a world such as this is, meaning among my neighbors and observing all the crime and the wretchedness, have faith in God? In a sense, it's a sort of a silly question. Can you have faith in things not seen? I've begun a series on the World Tomorrow program of 7 proofs there is a God. 7 absolute proofs, and these are scientific, but it's in layman's language. It's simple to understand. The first was law and a lawgiver, the fact that everything around you, and this is part of what you can't see, depends upon law, depends upon the observance of laws, depend upon the action and the interaction of various cause and effect, force and energy. Now, science can't really tell you what a law is when it is dealing with even the physical laws, because they don't know. They can only say it is some type of a property of matter, that force or energy. They use all these terms, they try to hang a label on it, but when you get right down to what is it tangibly, they don't know. They really, honestly do not know. Now, you can say that it's a law that living and not living inorganic things are all composed of the same basic building blocks. You are made of the same thing, basically, as the dirt under your feet. Now, people can get that out of a science book, it sounds like they ought to believe it. They get that out of the Bible. If they look in the Bible, it says, you are dust, as God said to Adam anciently. Adam, you are a clod. You're just a clod of earth. You are red mud. You're right of the soil. And when you die, back to the soil you go. Out of the soil, you get your sustenance. They don't want to accept that. They say, surely you don't believe in a story of Adam and Eve in a garden running around without any clothes on and the serpent around the tree, do you? Yes, I do. I believe in that absolutely because I've proved it. And if you don't believe in it, it's only because you've discarded it without proving it, and you have no excuse, and you have no other answer, and you do not stand on evidence because you don't have any evidence, and I've got the evidence and the proof. Not only faith, which is the evidence of things not seen, but faith, which is based upon billions of cubic yards of things which are seen. Laws that are absolutely operable, that act upon you, that you can't explain, can't do away with, can't resist, can't suspend, can't do a thing about. And they're going to enforce themselves on you the rest of your born days. And unless or until somebody comes up with a reason and a cause and some other excuse about all of these things, he has no excuse whatsoever to believe in evolution. What is faith? Faith is the belief in things not seen. It takes courage when things look pretty bad to believe they're going to be good. But that's what faith will give you. And I don't care if you're a housewife with your problems with a pocketbook. I don't care if you're a child studying in school or a businessman worried about a contract signing. If you've got courage and conviction and assurance and you can be positive, there has to be a reason for that conviction and assurance. And if your assurance comes from someone who knows somebody else who's working a deal and you're depending on that, if your conviction comes from depositing a check in a bank or because a teacher seems to be friendly to you, you're putting faith and trust in a lot of absolutely untrustworthy human beings and circumstances, and you don't have real faith at all. But if you had real positive assurance, faith in God, which is a gift that comes from God that He can put inside of you, then you've got something that is absolutely impossible to take away from you. Something that is going to stick with you regardless as to what your worries and problems are, and you would get rid of an awful giant pile of headaches. Now, I'm not talking about some sentimental thing of somebody to come along and hold your hand in time of need. I'm not talking about something you can work up. I'm not talking about you building up some notion in your own mind and sort of saying praise His name over and over again and coming up with faith. I'm talking about a divine miracle. But the place for you to begin is to prove there is such a God, to prove that the handiwork all around you that you see is His production, His creation, what He has produced, and begin to have more faith in those operable active laws, the interdependency of all life species, these living forms that every time you look at an aphid on a rose bush, you know that God designed them both. That every time you see it rain, you know that God caused these laws. That every time you breathe, you know that God Almighty put this into action. And every time you think about the human circulatory or the nervous or the skeletal system, you know that God is the designer of those systems. And you can prove it, and you know there is no other answer. Then you can have faith. You have faith to know that God that made those great stars up there that shrink our orange dwarf into insignificance, the one we call the sun, that set them to blazing with solar loops and prominences that extend hurling fire over a million miles into space. You know that the crackling, snapping, blue-white light that emanates from the face of that great God way beyond the spaces up there in the heavens created and made all these great bodies and made the earth and made life upon it. That's faith. And that's faith that is based upon absolute evidence that you can see and observe and depend upon. People saying they can't have faith because of the way the world is, does it make any difference because your neighbor gets in a rotten attitude? You mean to say that in some way affects your faith in God because of what people believe, because of what people do? Who do you want faith in, your neighbors or God? You better put your faith where it belongs. The Bible tells you, don't put your faith and trust in men. You don't want to depend on that bank coming through because it simply gives you a check. Don't put your faith in school chums, in motor vehicles. Don't put your faith in human governments. Don't put your faith in the military to save you from this or that. Don't put your faith in some childhood habit or some fanciful notion, some conjured up vision of your own. Put your faith on the tangible, solid framework of the fact that God exists and the fact of the evidence of that existence through the creation. And then in the Word of God as He reveals it to you, and you can prove that Word is true, you can prove that all these prophecies did come to pass, you can prove the almost unbelievable and remarkable accuracy of the historical sections of the Bible, you can prove the fulfilled prophecies of the past, and you can prove by the active living change and the dynamic answer of prayer that you can receive today that there is no other answer. And once you do that, you can have real faith. Now, I've been on a series of programs showing you these proofs that God exists. But it's important to you to know that these proofs relate to you and that there is a product involved, that when you prove that God exists, it has to do with the gospel. It has to do with the fact of the message that is given to you in the word of that God that says God's going to solve the world's problems because the world is unable to solve them for itself. Now, there is quite a message in the New Testament that people have ignored. The message of a coming world ruler that does know the way to peace and is going to enforce it on this earth. That's the gospel. It's good news. People don't want to believe it. Why? Well, because they've been given some kind of a sentimental idea a notion from somebody, somewhere, sometime, that thought Jesus came along to do away with his father's law, that he was just a sort of a sentimental dropout or beatnik of his day, who believed in all sorts of things that really the Bible doesn't say he believed in at all. They think he was some kind of a pacifist. They think he interfered with the Roman government. They think the very things that people accused him of then were apparently true. They've denied every miracle he ever produced. They've denied every sign he ever left behind. They don't even know what he looked like. They don't know of which race he came. They don't know when he came. They don't know the duration of his ministry. They don't know precisely what he taught and why he taught it. They don't know what the gospel means. They don't know that Jesus Christ continually promised that he was going to come back to this earth and that you can prove that. They don't know why. They don't know, was he resurrected? If so, when? How long was he in the tomb? Where did he go afterward? They don't know whether or not he's alive today. And if so, what's he been doing all this time? They don't know whether or not he plans to come back. They don't know what he's going to do when he gets here, if he does. And when you don't know that much about somebody, that's an awful lot not to know and to still say you know him. That would be a pretty weird thing to say, that you don't know what this person looks like. Now, you stop to analyze this about maybe a neighbor or a relative or a friend or something, if he is a friend. If you could say you knew somebody and say all of that. You don't know his race. Now, the world is a little mixed up on that. My Bible says he came right out of the tribe of Judah, but then people don't admit this because many people want to hate the Jews. Why that is? Well, that's good old dirty rotten human nature. Vanity, jealousy, lust, and greed. And race resentments, and there's no room for that in anybody's heart and mind, especially if he claims to be any kind of a Christian. So the world is mixed up about the race, the tribe from which Jesus Christ came. Now, they don't know when he came. They have all kinds of years for his birth. And let me just briefly tell you the reason for that, since we're coming along the corner here toward Easter anyhow. That is because if they were willing to admit that Jesus Christ of Nazareth was crucified in a specific year, and I can just tell you right quickly what it is, 31 A.D., they'd have to go back and readjust the year of his birth. They'd have to straighten out history and realize that Usher's chronology is about 3 years off on the whole scale in the first place. Then they would have to come back to the fact that the 14th of the first month of Jewish calendar months, in this way they counted from the fall harvest on across to the following fall harvest, and they began with the civil year, which was fall to fall, based upon the harvest, and the sacred year, if you could call it that, of the spiritual year from spring to spring. And in the spring, after the vernal equinox, this first month, Abib, or Nisan as it's called, when that 14th day of the first month, the day of what is called the Passover, and that's the word used, Pascha or Pascha, Passover. Today people observe what they call Easter, which is the name of a pagan goddess, and they haven't looked into it. And we have an article on the in the current number of the Plain Truth magazine that will help you understand about that if you want to write for it, incidentally. But if they would take this 1 year, 31 A.D., to even admit when Christ was born, the exact duration of his ministry, and then the year it was when he died, they would then have to admit to themselves that Christ, believe it or not, was crucified on a Wednesday. That's fact. In the middle of the week, just as the Bible said he would be. And that instead of a Good Friday, Easter, Sunday morning tradition, 3 days and three nights between Friday to Sunday, how do you do that? They would have to admit that in 31 A.D., the 14th of Nisan fell on a Wednesday, and that therefore Jesus Christ of Nazareth was in the tomb exactly as he said, 3 days and three nights, that he was put in that tomb just before sunset sometime on that Wednesday evening, Wednesday afternoon. The days begin at sunset. The following day, Thursday, was an annual high day, as the Bible says, and therefore he was in that tomb until Saturday afternoon, up until the time of early dusk or twilight, just before the sunset, and rose at that time, and that's why the Bible said that when the women arrived at the tomb Sunday morning, while it was yet dark, he had risen. The angel said, he is risen, he is not here. It's amazing how much people don't want to know about Jesus Christ. And it's all available, it's in the Bible. You don't have to have somebody there that knows Greek and Hebrew and Latin and Pig Latin and a few other things to tell you about what the Bible says. All you've got to do is to look at it and believe what it says for yourself. When it says 3 days and three nights in Matthew 12 and verse 40, you say 3 days and three nights. I believe that. But people say 3 days and three nights. Now, since tradition tells us that it's from Friday sunset until Sunday morning, that must not mean 3 days and three nights. It must mean part of one or the other. And maybe it was some old Greek idiom of some type. Well, then why does it say, as Jonah was 3 days and three nights in the belly of this great fish that had been prepared, and it possibly was a, as we say, a grouper or a black sea bass or something like that, which has actually swallowed divers in the past, not a whale. Whales have throats about yay big around, some of them. But at any rate, whatever kind of a fish it was, it says, even as Jonah was 3 days and three nights. And that is in the Hebrew language in the book of Jonah, and that's no Greek idiom, is it? But we have all these excuses that people have manufactured to get around the Bible. And why? Why do you want to get around the Bible? Why not just believe what it says? First, prove there is a God, and second, prove the Bible is His Word, and then believe what it says. You want to know how you can have faith living in a world such as this is? Just quit looking to your environment. Quit looking to the around and get your eyes up. Look above. Look to the heavens out there on a warm, starry night and ask yourself where they came from. And what are you doing standing straight up when people right straight through the earth from you about 8,000 miles are standing straight up in the opposite direction? And who put all these forces and energies and laws into motion? And who sustains them? And what is life and where did it come from? What about the fantastic design that you see? The intricacy of it? Now, the second great and major proof, and I've been a little bit sidetracked on this particular program, I'll come back to it next time, is life. What is life? Ask yourself that. We know that life comes only from life and from pre-existing life of the same kind today. I don't care if a moth in Pittsburgh becomes black because he wants to adapt to the soot and he has ecological adaptation and change. Certainly they do, but he's still a moth and he still begets other moths. I get dark if I stay out in the sun very long. So what if a moth turns black? Snowshoe rabbit, that didn't give me any problem because they change between the seasons. That's something that they don't sit and think, got to grow my white fur now. It's something that has been built into them. Who built it there? That's a law. It's in action, and you can't break it. How? Why? When did it start? You can find out there is a God. We don't have any excuse to accept these shaky, rickety ideas of evolution at all. I know it's impressive. You look at a book, it's got a lot of pictures of molecules. You read about DNA and everything else, and people talk about amino acids and protein structures, cells, and the building blocks of life and all of this, and you hear about a primeval soup, or you hear about ice crystals coming down, or you hear about scum or slime, the various ideas about where life came from. Then you're subjected to a lot of intellectual pressure. You are told almost anybody who is anybody believes in this, and if you don't believe in evolution, you're probably nobody. You're some kind of a religious nut or something. That's what people say. My friends, that is not true. Many leading scientists, if it's any comfort to you, believe there is a God and say so cheerfully, as did America's first astronaut, John Glenn. He said he knows the orderliness of the whole universe about us means there has to be a God. Well, you can write for the current number of the Plain Truth magazine. These articles, Kosygin reveals Russia's real fear, the one on mysterious paths in the sky, how bird migrations baffle evolutionists. And also the one on Romania to join the common market, an exciting preview of tomorrow's cities, and especially write for this booklet on what is faith. The booklet on what is faith. What is the definition of it? How do you understand how to get it? It's free of charge, no price, if you write to Herbert W. Armstrong, Box 111, Pasadena, California. That's Herbert W. Armstrong, Post Office Box 111, Pasadena, California. Be sure to tell us the call letters of your station, the address again in just a moment. Until next time, this is Garner Ted Armstrong saying goodbye, friends.
You have heard The World Tomorrow. Send your letters to Herbert W. Armstrong, Post Office Box 111, Pasadena, California.